This is VFR Kature and you're listening to WGXC Accra 98.7 FM.
Hudson Valley-based band Garcia Peoples perform Saturday, January 14th at Tubby's in Kingston. Garcia Peoples was formed in New Jersey by guitarist Tom Malak and Danny Arakaki, and later joined by Danny's brother Caesar on drums and Derek Spaldo on bass. Then they moved to the Hudson Valley and are now joined by keyboardist and multi-instrumentalist Pat Gubler from Copake and bassist Andy Cush. Garcia Peoples play at Tubby's in Kingston on Saturday, January 14th. Find out more about this event and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome. Good evening. Thank you for joining us this December. This is a holiday month, and we are going to have an incredible evening because I have an incredible guest. But before I get started with that, I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, awayfarm.org enterprise. WGXC 90.7 FM is a listener-supported, solar-powered, hands-on community media org covering Troy to Poughkeepsie, Middleburg to Great Barrington. Here, every third Tuesday of the month from just around 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. Oftentimes, I'm asked, why talk about race? And my answer is to combat that foe called racism. But you all know, it's not that we can just talk about it and it will go away. Education is key, and discussion, which is what we do here on Race Talks, is a must. We all need to take an active role in ending racial injustice here in America and wherever we find ourselves abroad, because there's simply just one race, the human one, and many ethnicities. And here on Race Talks is where we keep it real. And my guest talker this month, Anna Mehta, will share with you that her faith believes in the same thing about there being one race, the human one. So here.
No topic is taboo.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Everyone give it up for Anna Mehta. She's in the house, y'all. And already we're nonstop talking. So I had to put her on pause so we could just introduce the show. She's giggling now, but I'm so very thankful for her being on the show. I always say this about my guests, but it's always true, Anna. I meet the greatest people, and how we met at an event that, you know, we really weren't supposed to meet at. And you just were very happy and friendly and enjoy, you know, just have. You just had to see this life of energy, I guess. That's the best word. And it's like when you're around people, we feel the energy. And so dancing, I guess, is your calling, right? And you're going to share all that with us. But let me just first say to you all, as I like to do, is if you're going to stay with us, if you have the opportunity to stay with us for the entire hour, we will have some segments. Of course, we have a Q&A. We have talk term, which is cultural appropriation. Is it real still? Was it ever? We have a do you know, a DYK, about holiday festivals. 'tis the season. So we will be talking about it. And I like this new segment that I added, and we talked about it a little bit. Right acts. What can you do today, later today, later this evening, tomorrow, this week, this month, this year, or the beginning of next year to right the wrongs that racism and other evils have presented itself to the human race and cultures of the world. If we do one thing each time we go out and be around our fellow citizens, then we are doing our part in ending that scourge called racism and all the other isms that bring people down. But we don't want to harp on the negative. This is a holiday segment, so we're going to be also having a musical moment. And if the tech works, because you know it's real, it's live here on Race Talks, we may have Feliz Navidad sung. And I love it. I mean, when I was a kid, I just thought I knew Spanish, Anna, because I knew Feliz Navidad. And as I got older and learned how to pronounce it better, I really thought I was a Kiata. But I'm a dancer, not a singer. I remember my mother, God rest her soul. She said, God, Kim, you know, if you could actually dance as well, sing as well as you could dance, we could make some money up in here. Mm-hmm. I should have been a Jennifer Lopez, but no, I could only do the dancing. But okay, so I'm saying enough about myself and my past and my history. So we want to move on to my host. So I am going to bring in Anna Maytud now, and I think I just want to maybe say a few words. Of course, she can say more about herself, but I'm just going to read some of the texts that we put on wayfarm.org, which is where you may be headed if you are not in the area to listen to us live on WGXC 90.7 FM. You can certainly go to us right now and hit wayfarm.org. This is where you can give donations and you can hear us live on air. So Anna is a dance educator and choreographer. This discussion with her, we're going to highlight stories about Maytud's experiences growing up in Chile and in America as a native Spanish speaker. Maytud Fusion Dance has choreographed pieces about social action, like her recently unveiled piece on language prejudice performed in our fair town here of Hudson, New York, in collaboration with a spoken word artist and string musician whom she will name and give kudos to and shout outs to, I'm sure. Maytud's work is informed by her 4 years with the Race Unity Circle of Poughkeepsie, and the Race Unity Circle organizes public events to educate and enlighten the public about the perils, struggles, and pain racism causes in society. And just like I said, Anna, when you meet her, she's a ray of light, energy, and she will share a little bit about her religious beliefs as we talk about why we celebrate cultures and how celebrations come to being, especially around this time. So we're going to look at Hanukkah. We're going to look at a little bit about some of the African and Native Indian, or I shouldn't say Native Indian, Indians from India. And a lot of them that have dance involved in it, because of course that helps body, soul, interesting music that can flow and get our bodies and our minds to heal in essence. So it's like, that's what we're doing at a celebration where we do movement, we're healing and we're sharing. That's my thought anyway. What is yours, Miss Anna Maytud? Give our listeners a little bit about your history, as much as you care to share, and answer that question for me.
The healing question, the healing. Yes. Yes, dance is very healing, and I'm so excited to be a part of your show, as you mentioned. I started dancing when I was 14, and it was extremely healing for me. At first, I used to use the studio in Beacon, New York, when I came back from Chile at 14, and would improvise. And really through that improvisation, I found a ton of healing with certain aspects, you know, with different things. And I found my calling, as you were saying, and I found that dance is my passion. And I've been doing it. Dance and education too has become my passion for the past 20 years since 2001, when I started my first job at a Montessori school in Newburgh. So yeah, so I've been at this for quite a while.
Well, you mentioned prior to being in Newburgh, you grew up, or I should say, did you mention the fact that you grew up initially in another country, not in the United States?
Yes, correct. So I grew up in Chile. And so I grew up bilingual, English and Spanish, English at home and Spanish in Chile. And so I grew up with kind of essentially two worlds, the English American world at home and the Spanish, because when I speak Spanish, my body language can change a bit. Or when you speak English, there is a certain aspect of tonality in the language. I grew up in my parents gave me a very cool childhood in that way, because I got to experience two worlds. And then coming back to the States, and then as I became a stronger educator, and in the past 10 years, I started developing my Spanish language through movement program. And now I am a Spanish teacher at a school in Saugerties. I'm so excited to say that I'm officially a Spanish teacher. And I'm so grateful for this Buddhist school in Saugerties that gave me the opportunity.
Well, let me jump in here, because we did have a Spanish language teacher on air just this year. And she is at the Hudson City School District. And I don't know if she blends in other techniques when teaching, but do you yeah. find yourself yeah. at this school being able to do, more creative Spanish teaching?
Yes, because it's a private Buddhist school, so I'm able to be very creative and basically create my own curriculum with the help of a teacher there who kind of oversees the curriculum making. And I can teach songs, I can do movement, I can be extremely creative, which is it's very a perfect fit for me. I could not be a public school teacher for full time. I go into the public schools, but it's more part-time after school programs or as a teaching artist, but I could not do full time.
Well, I could say that when I think of you as teacher, I do see you dancing around the room only because, and I think this isn't the only time, it's definitely one of only two times that on our marketing materials, we have, usually we just have a face, but we have almost a full length body of you in movement. And yes. We got two choices, and I thought I really wanted to show the one with you. We chose the one with the black image, with you in black, all black, mm-hmm. you know, like looking up into the air in free life form. But we like the other one with the blue, I call it the blue wave scarf. And I think you know why I call it the blue wave scarf, because you use that to perform your piece on, is it linguistic? Can you help me with the term?
Language prejudice. And I'm so grateful you came. Thank you for coming and supporting. That was so wonderful to see you and your friends.
Well, I'm going to give shout out to the Hudson Area Library for hosting it. And mm-hmm. With you and many of the other people whose organizations that supported it by helping with funding. And I certainly want you to share the names of your group. You had students who helped you, that we saw video, we saw a live dance piece, we had a poetess.
Yes, Miss Ipateo. She's yes. the poet. She is like the best. And then Carolyn from Kingston, Carolyn Lachusa from Kingston, incredible cellist and talent. And yeah, so I was very grateful that they were there and participated with me. Yeah.
And I actually brought a guest, a friend of mine who is at Saratoga, lives in Saratoga or works in Saratoga at Skidmore College. I told her this was a fabulous opportunity to see live performance, and she was on board. And when we were there, she had the stack of paper because what you provided us with was the actual poems that were being read. You had a whole description of what we would be seeing, and everything was also in the Spanish language.
Yes,
so
yes,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was bilingual. So what is your motivation for organizing, or I should say choreographing, dance around language? So linguistics is, you know, the learning of language and sounds to make language for communication purposes. So yeah, what was your aha moment that says, I have to create this? And now it seems like it's informed you going into teaching, which I didn't even know that you were thinking about or had the desire to do.
Oh, I do want to work on this language thing and create a workshop around language prejudice, not Spanish language, but the language, how language affects one in daily life. I do want to go do more of that, of education. And so it's a road. I think for me, in finding inspiration is a road. It's in my social action pieces. I've created two social action pieces on women and empowerment of women. And as I'm a Baha'i, that's my faith. And as a Baha'i, there's this teaching of the equality between men and women. Men and women are equal in the eyes of the higher power. And so I really, being in the lifestyle that I trying to navigate these waters, it's really important for me to empower myself and all women about the equality. And so I created two pieces on that with like quotes. I love quotes. And this language empowerment kind of was created in that idea of learning about racism in the United States, being a part of the Race Unity Circle, which and then also being a Baha'i and watching the CNN video about, you know, what's going on racially in this country. So I wanted to, but I couldn't, I was like, well, I'm not Black. I'm like this redheaded white girl, like growing up in Chile, bicultural, like I have to connect to what connects to me in order to be authentic to the audience, for the audience. And it's very,
I love that.
Yeah, it's very,
I'm sorry to even stop you. I want you to repeat that statement. It's like, you don't have to be about it.
Right. Right. And it's very important. And see, in my work, especially with my cultural work, to respect. I love this quote. I, you know, in creating my fusion work and my dance work and bringing these cultures together is to showcase the oneness of humanity through bringing the cultures together, but also to the idea of respect, that if you want to learn a dance from another culture or anything, you have to respect it and travel to that country and really understand the culture and understand the history and really envelop it into your being before, you know, it's very important. And that's a real, you have to really show that respect. And like when I went to India, I dressed in the Indian clothes, and when I was in Zimbabwe, I tried to learn their language, which is really hard.
Do you know any kind? I usually try to learn hi by some numbers, and like my name is. Those are like the basic things I try to learn in every language that I come across. So can you share anything you might have learned?
I'm putting you on the spot. When I travel again, I will definitely remember that. I did try to learn Shona when I was in Zimbabwe for 6 months. Because I love African dance is really a part of me. I just finished with Kwanzaa here in Hudson, and I love dancing Afro, but I really tried to understand it and understand the history and culture and background to respect the culture. And I don't remember much of it. There was this one song or this one, I know how to say I love you in Shona, but now I can't remember.
Well, that's okay. But you even said the language Shona, right? So that's even something.
Was 50 years ago. That was like, oh.
Yeah, it's hard.
2003 that I went to Zimbabwe.
I lived in Germany for 2 years and I am about 10 years removed now. And it's so hard. And I mean, I used to have like dreams in German. I remember being so like, oh, I'm not gonna learn German. And I had a person who mentioned to me, no, eventually you'll start even dreaming in German. And that happened. And then I came back to the States and I was like English, German, and then just English. And do I even know any German anymore? It's almost so hard.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm half Jewish. So the Yiddish is very Germanic.
Oh yeah.
Is the German name. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know you were Jewish. Okay, so we're gonna have a real conversation here because I have some questions. Half Jewish?
Half Jewish.
Well, still, that's a thought. What does it mean to be half? Okay, so I'm just gonna hold off on that because you did a great segue in what you talked about to our talk term, appropriation.
Yes.
And there was an article in Medium. So it's not from, you know, an Ivy League institution or the government, you know, or any actual, you know, grammar books or dictionaries that we look at and we you know, pay good money to buy. But I like this because it's an everyday person kind of belief and opinion on it. And that's who we are. We are everyday. And actually, everybody's everyday, right? So
yeah.
She writes this. Performers can make, first she says, is it appropriation or inspiration? And from what you're sharing with me and how you go about or how you've gone about, you know, including dance and different dances in your repertoire, it sounds to me that it's more of an inspiration for you and that you honor it the way, you know, you can celebrate and show or acknowledge that the culture is a value and that you're not in a sense appropriating, taking what you like from it and then skewing it to make it, to fit it into your cultural norms and backgrounds. Like you said, you wear the outfit, you try to learn the language, or I should say the costume or the what is it called? When you dance, is it a costume?
Yeah. It's a costume. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. See, it's been a long time since I've been on stage. So when it says appropriation or inspiration. So from what you're sharing to me, I would say what you do is inspiration, but she writes, performers can make a little more effort to ensure they are connecting with and representing a dance according to its true traditions and cultural heritage. And she cites this title, The Conversation, that was written in 2017. There's actually a video that I won't show because we're on air and it's more kind of a musical thing and with no speaking. In the video, she mentions all women group of dancers perform a Jamaican style of dance called dance hall. Mm-hmm. However, they never mention that it comes from Jamaica and you would not know that by what they're wearing or anything that, you know, there's no text, no anything. So in her statement or her belief, she's seeing that as appropriation where someone has copied a dance style without giving its recognition or its due to where it originated. Mm-hmm. And she writes mixed race, which that term I don't particularly use, but mixed race women posing by windows in blue shirt and white fur coat was a choreographer of the video who was later accused of cultural appropriation since all of the dancers were of light skin and from New Zealand. Mm. So in this title, it's praising twerk. Why aren't we all shaking our butt by Lucille Tall's 2017? So are you familiar with twerking?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have to ask, because I think sometimes it's, you know, pop culture. And that's kind of what happened. You have someone's, you know, what's the term? In-house or, you know, in-group statements, dance terminology. And then someone from a group that's outside of that cultural norm utilizes it. And it's kind of cool, but then it blows up and now it becomes what everyone sees. But then everyone refers to that with this, the person who brought it to the mainstream, not from where the person actually initially found it. So twerking, for example, who I forget the woman, the girl who did a lot of twerking on her show. Do you remember her name? She was a singer. She was a child performer, and then, you know, singer, like concerts for young kids. They were always jam packed. But anyway, she's a little bit before my, after my time. So, but she kind of made it blow up in the United States in the media. But that's what she was talking about when it comes to appropriation. And of course, appropriation with music and other forms of entertainment, media and arts, cultural arts, is the case too. So is that a form of flattery, like we usually say? Aping or copying is a form of flattery, or is it something that is negated, should be negated?
Well, I was thinking, I have been thinking a lot about this, like when I started my fusion program. As I was thinking about this radio show, I was thinking about the term and appropriation and all that. And I really think that the world, that this is my point of view, that in music and in dance, there's similarities and differences. And there has to be a level of sharing, a level, and I really love to hear music that is fusion music. There is fusion music of flamenco and jazz. There's fusion music of blues and, you know, hip hop. And the fusion is an aspect of witnessing that oneness of humanity through the arts. And so, but there has to be a level of respect and a level of honesty and a level of authenticity. And when creating my fusion program, I don't fuse every single dance style in the world, because I haven't studied them. And on YouTube, I'm not going to be teaching a dance that I studied on YouTube, because that's not authentic, right? So I really put these dance styles of African, flamenco, classical Indian, modern, and Latin together. But these are dance styles that I have studied, like the flamenco. I wanted to bring in the Spanish into my heart. I wanted to understand the Spanish, because I grew up in Chile. There was these gypsies in Chile, and I found them really interesting with these skirts. And I wanted to learn about the gypsy culture. And I wanted to really, so there's reasons why I studied these dance styles. African dance connects to my way of movement. I also thought about how people move. And sometimes some dance style, like ballet, doesn't work for my style of body type, for one thing. Also, another thing, I never really thought of myself going on point. So you really have to like respect, like if you see someone, maybe someone who is, you know, there's like ballet comes from Europe. It comes from this very white, and you see incredible Black ballet dancers, and they should be, the black company should be integrated. Ballet companies should be integrated. Anyway, everything, I think, needs a lot of art, the integration of the art and the integration of the dance companies to be more diverse is important. Like having the you know, the CNN, the diverse relationships between different people. But I think it's all the authenticity and the respect and the honesty and the learning and the education is important. That to me is really, and so if someone is putting on a costume of a different culture and doesn't understand the culture and just thinks it's funny, then that's really like disrespectful and really kind of, you know, disgusting. But
well, Anna, you brought up something that I think is so wonderful. You mentioned fusion, which when you fuse, you bring together and you entwine it, and it's like you integrate it. And that's what I guess what I mean is inspirational in what you're saying. So, but when you do fuse, it's not like you take two and you kind of share the two on the same stage in a sense. But like with twerking, it's not really integrating, right? It's just, I'm using it and putting it to some music. However, I do see how it can be confusing to one who might not even know that they're appropriating something, right? Mm-hmm. So if I see someone doing something and I ape them and I do what they do, and then someone says, hey, you know, because my skin tone isn't the correct way for someone to do it who was originating culture, then they have a problem with me. I don't think that would be valid, right? I mean, because that's kind of what you're saying. You know, we should all be able to enjoy others' cultures, even if we don't know that that's exactly what we're doing. Because I always say you can't be an unhappy dancer. You cannot be moving and being unhappy. You can move and cry because it brings you memories and you know, a somberness can overcome you, but you can't be unhappy and right. dance at the same time. Yes. And so I think if you're dancing from anyone's culture, whether you're bringing it together and creating something special by that unity, or you're just, you know, doing something like I, in school, I remember, and I never liked it because, again, I'm not from Texas. I used to say that when I was a kid. We used to have to bow to our partners and to the former pairs, show a nice smile to the rest in the square. We're going to do some dancing. I remember the words that would be said, and we would be square dancing. And I'm like, how are people in New York square dancing? And Hudson, as small as it was, that population 7,000, which was probably a little bit bigger than, more populated than now. But we are, you know, we're a city. Why are we doing country dancing? But I think without knowledge of that, I wouldn't have any knowledge of line dancing or spirit for it. Because now, I mean, I could, you know, do-si-do, and I like it, and it's fun. And so I think, you know, we might have a fear of doing something we're not quite used to doing, but I think it's all, especially if it's in good spirit, it's to the betterment of us as a whole. Like you say, you go around the world and you dance inspirational dances inspired by other cultures and you're better off for it, right?
It shows that oneness. Yeah, sorry for interrupting, but I don't know if you've seen this Irish African American who's won a lot of awards. She was like very well, I think she was on TikTok. She was famous on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok, but I did. Oh. And I was like, oh my gosh, she is incredible. And you know, Irish dance is, you know, redhead, white. You consider it a white dance form. But here is this woman who is African American. And so that's what I'm saying. Sometimes some bodies, sometimes you find a dance style that works for you. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what that's what I'm saying. Like through the arts and through dance and through music, you can bring the world together. Like art can change. Art can change the world. And so if we're talking about oneness and we're talking about so that we have to have in some ways a judgment-free zone, because with any art form and especially with dance and how your body is, some people can't. I mean, there's certain dance forms I cannot do. You know, there's certain things I'm not able to do. So in that sense, there's this aspect of awe when you see an African woman doing African-American or I don't know where she's from in terms of, but she was black skinned. I don't know if she's American. I can't remember, but incredibly talented Irish dancer and won a ton of awards. She was in a new, you know, so in that sense, there's this quote that says art inspires, as you're saying, and art empowers. And so by witnessing these different people doing different dance forms or musical forms, it kind of brings that inspiration in others.
Morgan Bullock, this Black Irish step dancer is making history in award-winning Riverdance show. Morgan Bullock from Richmond went viral online for her unique spin on Irish step dancing. See, this is her unique spin, right? She's bringing a little bit of her, fusing it with Irish dance. Amazing. No, I haven't seen it. And I'm almost mad at you for not sharing with me in advance, because then I could have, you know, put this on as, you know, something. But
I just was reminded it when you were talking to me. So I was
Hey, that's why it's Race Talks and we're keeping it live, because we didn't have this conversation before and you're sharing with me and some listeners who aren't TikTok savvy. I mean, I don't know. I'm more of that political thought about TikTok. I'm not really sure how much I want to engage. Plus, I just have a lot of
Twitter or TikTok. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but thank you for that. I actually, you know, I'm a dancer. Well, no, I'm not. You don't know, maybe. So I'm going to share. I'm a dancer. I actually taught tap, ballet, and jazz in Brooklyn when I was in my early 20s. I was in dance class in New York City. And met this woman who thought, hey, you dance really well and I need a dance teacher. And I was like, wow, that's easy to get a job. So I taught dance for her for a few, I think it was like 7-8 months. And then I left New York because I'm always traveling and moving different places. But that was a boon for me. And I learned all that from my alma mater here in Hudson, New York. And you could still join. And she's not paying me to say this, but Jean Villers of the Sternfeld Dance Studio was key for me to learn and start. And I had my mother's friends who would see me walking up and down the street when I would walk to class. It was on Warren Street at the time. They would say I would literally tap dance across the street. I said, no, I didn't. They're like, no, you were tap dancing across the streets. But I do know that I would tap dance in elevators, anywhere where I can make some sound alone. I love that sound so much. So it's not quite the same as Irish dancing, step dancing, but you know, they do make sounds and it's fabulous. So I love it. I love it. I love it.
It is. It's two fabulous dance styles, tap and Irish, and come from different cultures and different history, and they're just, yeah. So
and I'm gonna also give a shout out, because you know, it is sometimes, like you mentioned with ballerinas, if you don't have the right correct body shape, then you're not placed into those mediums, those dance mediums. And so as a young person, I was big breasted, big in the back area there. And everyone thought I looked great. You know, I didn't need to like go on a diet or, you know, eat more, but that wasn't the shape of a ballerina.
Right.
And I was a little bit floored because I didn't think I was going to be able to get into my tutu. And my dance teacher said, no, you can wear your tutu. I never advanced to the point of being on point and ballet shoes, although I wore them once. And when I saw the difficulty of putting my feet in there, I mean, you really, it's almost like being a Chinese, what is that? Chinese, or is it Japanese? Japanese cultural, from, I don't know if it's, I don't think they still continue it, but when the women, they break their feet to keep their feet very short, small. And so it's almost like you're breaking your toes when you're putting your feet into toe shoes. But once obviously they get used to it, it's fine. But I just did not want to deform my feet in that way. So that kind of kept me from really wanting to go further in it. unlike Misty Copeland, I'm not saying I'd ever be someone like her, but you know, so many people were able to, but there's still such a small list. I think if you Google them, you'll get less than 10.
Right. Names. And that needs to change. Well, from my point of view, that in terms of bringing that oneness that Baha'u'llah talks about and the change in arts and the diversity, the unity and diversity, to have Black, Hispanic, white in the art and the dance forms, and to understand the diversity, that we're all flowers in one garden, that it should not be just a white ballet company and a Black ballet company, or have Alvin Ailey and then have, you know, it also creates much more of a richness in the art when there is diversity in colors and diversity in races and diversity. I mean, color is just a man-made concept, but as you're saying, ethnicity or cultures, and also within that, then you have different colors and also I think the judgment is important. Like for me, growing up in Chile, coming back years ago, I didn't want to speak Spanish for a long time because the Latinx people I felt judged because I'm very light-skinned white girl with red hair. So I think the judgment in the dance world, like with in the ballet world, when you are not considered, you know, I saw this when I was 14, I studied dance in Ballet Art Studio in Beacon. And there was this woman, she was voluptuous, you know, not skinny at all. She was an incredible dancer, such a good dancer. And she was on point and she was such a good ballet dancer. But I felt so bad for her because I was like, she's not going to be able to get into any of the ballet companies because she's mm-hmm. her body type isn't. And so I think that I will love to witness or observe change in that arena, but I don't know if I'm going to see it in my lifetime. But
I think that is rich because there's something that we are looking at now that I think there's a change because we're seeing changes in TV advertising. We're seeing changes in ways people are represented in movies and other film type of media. It seems like every group of, whether it's a business or a Fortune 500 company or small mom and pop, everyone is trying to find their sense of representing different ethnicities, different skin types, skin hues, it's definitely languages. I think there's more and more, still not enough, but more. I think people should know if they don't already. It's hard to know things when you don't constantly go to school. You know, our young people right now, since I do substitute teach for the Hudson City School District, I'm in grade school, junior high, and in the high school, and I'm getting the flavor of all of what all of these age groups of students are learning and the knowledge. And it's so much more than when I was going to school. And that's just, you know, where they have. They're learning about more presidents now because there were more presidents, but there's also more breakthroughs in science. And there's a lot of different cultural fusions and mixes. And so there's so many more things that sometimes we forget or we never knew. And I say all that to say, English is not the only language for the United States. So we are probably one of the only, what do you call it? I don't know if New World or New Western countries, that's called that way, that doesn't have stated a language. So America doesn't have English as its language. We utilize it that way, but it's not written into any text. It's not in the Constitution. It's not in the, you know, Bill of Rights, the bylaws. Nothing legal makes English the language of our country, of our nation, and yet we obviously understand that that's the case because of its utilization. So Spanish is what one would say is the default language. Maybe, you know, if it's going to be something now, if it's going to be in English. More or less likely you'll see it in Spanish. But I used to work in Florida, and that's where I thought In fact, people were saying, if you're going to go to Miami, which I did, I lived in Miami for about 4 years, they said you had better learn Spanish because no one speaks English there. Well, everyone speaks English there, and a lot of people speak Spanish there, but there was also a lot of Creole there. And in the school districts, things went home in 3 or 4 languages, depending on what school district you were from, period. So it seems like where there's families, living together, you see the richness of the diversity of language, of cultures, dance, religions, than more so than if you're in a smaller place or with less diversity.
I agree. Well, cities, you see real big diversity in cities, but I love Hudson, and in terms of there's a lot of diversity here in this small town, which I'm really grateful for. I'm grateful for this.
Well, this is taking us to our next segment.
Oh, okay.
And this one is a Do You Know, DYK. Do you know of the holidays or special celebrations that we are engaged in December? Other than Christmas, you actually mentioned one. So what's the African-American holiday celebration you recently went to?
Kwanzaa
in America, in Hudson there.
Yes, yep. Winter solstice.
Whoa, you're good. Okay, that's another one. I Googled that.
I was just in my Buddhist school celebrating winter solstice yesterday. So I remember that because I was just...
Well, you know what? You're encompassing another segment called Right Acts, because what you're doing, I couldn't attend any. I've been a little bit under the weather, so I haven't been going out to play. But that's what Right Acts is, kind of sharing with those of us who would like to know how can we be more interactive with others that are outside of our in-group cultural norm.
I also performed at Kwanzaa at Hudson Hall. That was like fabulous. It was so much fun.
So you can perform, buy a ticket, support with funds, right? Because
yes,
a lot of these
fusion dance. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of these organizations are nonprofit and only are able to
Fusion Unite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of grants and funding from supporters like yourself, like our show, and
yes.
Our station. So, mm-hmm. Anything else? Can you think of anything else you may have done in the past that you can share with our listeners about Right Acts? What are some great activities that they could engage themselves in?
So, winter solstice is coming up soon. So there's different people sometimes like to throw things at a fire, and there's Hanukkah. Hanukkah.
I was going
to
say, you're part Jewish. So yeah. Do you celebrate Hanukkah? I remember singing songs in school about Hanukkah.
I don't much. I know I didn't grow up, but my mom likes to put, sometimes she likes to put the candles. But no, I didn't grow up so much. Didn't know. But there is always a remembrance. Oh, it's Hanukkah. And we talk about it, my mom and I.
And since we're linguistic gurus, you and I. Is it Hanukkah with an H, or is it Hanukkah with a CH?
Oh my gosh. I think since you're an English teacher, I think you have more of a Hanukkah. It's Hanukkah. I don't, you might have a better better sense. I have researched the language for my more geography, my language prejudice, and I've worked really hard on my writing, but
so. I just wanted to know your thoughts, since you are part Jewish. And when you say part Jewish, it's because you have one parent who is of Jewish descent.
She's Jewish, but she at 18, 19, she found, my mom found the faith, Baha'i faith, and she became a Baha'i. So I was raised as a Baha'i. My dad is Dutch German, Pennsylvania German. Both my parents grew up in Pennsylvania, and my dad grew up as a Baha'i. So, you know, I have a kind of, my parents grew up differently, very different. And they both found the faith in a different way.
Wow. I wanted to say that I didn't know too much about winter solstice. It's like the winter soldier. I know, I'm crazy. But the winter soldier reminds me of winter solstice. And I'm thinking, is that the same thing? Because that's
it's the darkest night of the day. Yes, darkest day. The darkest day
of winter, of the year.
Yeah, where the sun goes down the earliest. And then you can do, like with summer solstice as well, you can do a lot of different like rituals, you know, and sending the bringing in the positive and, you know, the negative out. And
I like that you brought in your religions, because there are people without any religion. And so they don't really do too much celebrating because of a holiday. But there's also people who are pagans still, and they celebrate Yule, which mm-hmm. is a pagan holiday celebrating the winter solstice. And there's a lot of holidays that they are celebrated over 12 days. I don't know if you can remember, because you said you left South America when you were younger, but it seems to me, I lived in Mexico for a brief, short period of time. I think it was a whole month, 30 days. I was basically teaching and working, teaching and living there. And they had so many holidays. I mean, so many days for vacation. I was like, do you guys ever work? And they're just happy people. I think people in the South, Southern, you know, where it's warmer, they just have more time to be outdoors and just to be happy. You know, it goes back way back, I guess, to not having to forage for food too hard, because it was always there. It was always in abundance with the weather being the way it was. But that's a different kind of, so they have 12 days, and then Hanukkah is over a period of days. Mm-hmm. Kwanzaa is over a period of days beginning in December 26th. Kwanzaa is actually a 7-day secular harvest festival and celebration of life, brought in by African-American cultural heritages. And I think people should know that Kwanzaa is not an alternative to Christmas.
That's what I mean.
Right. You can do both. and there are main dishes. And I think, though, with Kwanzaa, was there like drumming that you danced to?
There was African dance. So we did a whole African dance segment in the show. I was teaching for Hudson Youth Center, and learned a lot about, I don't remember. There are some names that I remember.
Ujima is one.
I remember what you put on the table. No, two things. You remember only one, the flag, which is in Spanish, which is, now I'm blanking out on the name, but there's quinte, which is the fabric you put on the table, I think.
Like the quinte cloth.
The quinte cloth. Then there is bandera, which is the flag. And then that's all I remember.
Well, since you brought it up, I'm going to be really quick about it, because we're running out of time.
Oh, in terms of the terms, in terms of the seven principles, it's what I remember is creative, which is kumba. Kumba is creativity.
Yes.
I can't say it. I won't try to say it. Yes. And then that is supporting the Black businesses.
Or self-determination.
That's self-determination. Yeah.
I'd love for us to say them all. I'm just going to say them. Umoja.
Umoja is unity.
Ujama. Kujichagulia. Nia. Kumba. Imani. And Imani. And those are places of special significance on the children. Now, I just wanted to go through that really quickly, because we want to play the music, but I also knew that you want to share things about what's happening with you coming up. And I want to give you a few minutes to do that before going out with the Feliz Navidad song.
Well, so I'm organizing with Movement Exchange, which is an international dance program with like schools, as a matter of fact, universities. There's chapters in each university, and the universities, and then they go to Panama and they dance and they do programs in Panama. But I'm organizing, they have a day of free classes, and I'm organizing a fusion dance class via Zoom January 28th, 10 to 11. And then that's, I think, pretty much is kind of, you know, winter kind of hibernation. Other things happen. But if you want to connect with me, you can email me at metafusiondance@gmail.com, or in my email, my website is metafusiondance.org.
And MetaFusion is M-A-Y-T-A, MetaFusion, F-U-S-I-O-N, dance, D-A-N-C-E. And, or you can just go to, you can type her name in, Anna Mehta with Race Talks, and her information will pop up that way too. You can also go to my website to find it if you'd like to have more information. And I'd like to take this opportunity, Anna, again, to say thank you for coming on Race Talks and being real about your past, your life now, and your thoughts, your religions, your backgrounds, all your cultures. You're a beautiful specimen of humanness.
My gosh, that was a very kind words you just bestowed on me, and you are amazing as well. And I look forward to more coffee together and dancing together.
Oh, we're gonna dance together. I'm gonna get well, and I'm going to definitely be dancing with you, because you're, like I said, you're inspirational, and we could do some kind of radio rocket thing with our body types.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, but let's go out. This is with tech working well. We can have it done. So while we go out, I just want to also say we're not going to come back. So I want to let everyone know, no matter what your cultural background is, your ethnic makeup, any way you look, sound, just behave as right as you can for yourself and others, and do so this holiday season, and find a way to smile and, of course, dance and maybe even sing. This is Kimberly Irwin, your host of Waste Talks, again with Anna Mehta, signing off. Mehta. Anna Mehta, signing off.
Yes, you got it. Thank you.
Yay.
Kimberly, for having me, and I loved having a conversation with you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Oops, did I do it wrong again? I'm trying to get it, Anna. I think we might have to talk some more. let's just say that I am all about my sign out. My sign off is love, beauty, joy.
We can sing it. We can sing, Kimberly. Feliz Navidad.
Remember what my mom said?
Feliz Navidad y prospero año. You speak Spanish, girl?
Prospero año y felicidad.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad.
Now they're hanging Navidad. Up. Do you know all the words?
No, I was trying to look for that song to teach my kids, as a matter of fact, at the school. I was looking, I was doing that, and I was like, oh, I can teach this song to them for that I was singing. So I was practicing it. So
Feliz Navidad. Can you hear me?
Feliz Navidad. Yes.
Okay, here we go. Feliz Navidad. Let's sing it with it.
Okay, ready?
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. We're going to be cut off really soon. Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad, that's right.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.